And good morning and welcome to Coffee with the Radio Ranch Wranglers here on the Scriptures for America Worldwide Broadcasting Network, coming to you live November 1st, 2025. We'll be right back right after this song. Stay tuned, folks. America, the tide is rising fast. Don't you think it's time now to remember your great past? America, America, now the tide can still be turned. Just open up your eyes and see the lessons to be learned. America, America, once God's word was your standard, how gradually you've compromised, how far you finally wandered. For the years of silent apathy, to God we now repent. For the years of work we might have done, that's already now been spent. America, America, the tide is rising fast. Don't you think it's time now to remember your great past? America, America, now the tide can still be turned. Just open up your eyes and see the lessons to be learned. Land needs Jesus now. If he's confined within the church, its walls will crumble down. We must awake, we must arise for his kingdom to secure. We know the battle has been won. Yes, the victory is sure. America, America, the tide is rising fast. Now don't you think it's time now to remember your great past? America, America, now the tide can still be turned. Just open up your eyes and see the lesson. Just open up your eyes and see the lesson to be learned. Just open up your eyes and see the lesson to be learned. You better just open up your eyes and see the lesson to be learned. And good morning once again. You're listening to Coffee with the Radio Ranch Wranglers here at the Scriptures for America Worldwide Broadcasting Network. I'll bring the men on the line. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning.
Good morning, Will.
Good morning.
And thanks for being here, guys. Let's go to our Heavenly Father with a word of prayer. Oh, dear Heavenly Father, we come before you and we thank you for this opportunity to be here. And we just ask, Father, that you lead us, guide us, and direct us this morning, and that you be with this program. Help us to have a good one. Lord, let it be a blessing to the saints and a blow to the snakes. And Lord, we just pray that you grant us an extra dose of the Holy Spirit this morning as we go out over the airways and just lead us, guide us, and direct us. We ask for your assistance here. We ask for your guidance. And Lord, we plead the blood of Jesus Christ over this land, over this nation, and just pray, Father, for your people. We lift your people up, and we ask that they turn to you and seek you in your ways. And we thank you, Father, for the awakening that we see happening. In Jesus Christ's name, we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Well, it's hard to believe that it's already November, and it's like, I mean, looking at it, it seems like it just, I don't even know what happened to October. It just was here and gone, and November, and we're just, before we know it, it's going to be the end of the year. Kind of crazy.
I know. It's been really wild. Yeah. Yesterday was like the first of October.
Someone flipped the fall switch down here, too. They went from literally 7 days ago. This time last week when we were on air, I think we had a 97-degree day last Saturday. And today it's going to be 79. So it flipped.
Wow.
And just great mild weather. I'm very thankful for that.
Yeah. We've been blessed with, it's been mild. We've had a little bit of rain, and it's good. But it, like you said, the fall switch has flipped. Leaves are falling off the trees, and I'm making a mess of everything. And but it's definitely time to, you hit the door, and it's like, okay, yeah, it reminds you real quick that you need to put a sweatshirt on.
Yeah, well, we had a super nice October. I mean, it was evidently so nice it even had the plants confused, because we had lilacs blooming in October, and some of the apple trees rebloomed. I mean, I've never seen that happen before, so that was just strange.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, don't know what that was about, but... Yeah, just I'm sure they wish they had now.
Well, this is the time. I don't know if you guys have to mess with them or not, but down here in South Texas, we have grass spurs. People call them a lot of different things, cockaburs, grass spurs, or whatever. What I call them is torture.
Yeah.
And this is the time of year when we don't have rain and we get into fall. It's a great reminder that Eve really probably should have left that tree alone, because if this is not living under the curse, I don't know what is. Grass burrs are terrible.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I think we call them sand burrs, but yes, absolutely. Yep. They go in real easy, but come out real hard.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Kind of like other wicked things in life. Go in easy, come out hard.
Yeah. But. I don't know, talking about wickedness and all that sort of stuff. I think you sent me the story, Jason, but do y'all see what's going on down in Rio de Janeiro? Like, they have, that place has been turned upside down.
Yeah.
The police raids, and I don't know. I think I don't really know what started it all. I don't know if you guys do or not.
I do not. I know that, I know several people that spent quite a bit of time over there in Brazil, and actually love it over there. And they, they're the ones that comment on it. It's like, now is definitely not the time to be going over to Brazil. They stay in touch with quite a few people over there, and it's it just sounds like the whole, not just Rio, but the whole country of Brazil is a mess.
Yeah, they I think they're just this week they're up to 132 people killed in a massive police raid. That is amazing to me that and it was apparently all aimed at these organized crimes and criminals and gangs and that sort of thing, but it sounds like there somebody has decided to clean up Brazil, and they're doing a heck of a job, at least. One of the interesting things to me of reading through this, just because it's stuff that we have talked about, it's getting reported that the cartels, the gangs that are there in Rio de Janeiro and in Brazil, are using drones against the police.
Really?
That they've weaponized drones. Yeah.
Well, that makes you wonder if they didn't go over and train over and...
That's right. That's right.
In the Ukraine.
In the Ukraine. Yeah, when I was reading through that, I thought, well, I've seen that before. We've talked about that. So, you know, who knows where it went, right? I mean, that may be the new thing now all across the world.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting that I guess this was Red Command. It's like the oldest organization they have as far as in Brazil. It dates all the way back to previous takeovers and hostile takeovers and stuff. So my question for that is, why now? I mean, why did they decide to do that, today or yesterday or whenever it was?
Makes you question timing. Yeah.
So,
where you think the chances are of it's coming from the White House with the pressure on all these Latin organized criminal gangs. Venezuela is not too far from Brazil.
No, it's not. That's a good point. I didn't think about that.
Yeah. Just a thought.
Yeah, well, and it's a good one. So, might be some... And the other thing is there's a lot of these criminal organizations that are getting really big for their britches. Like we said, they've gotten to the point where, just like that, they have drones. I mean, basically, they have the same technology as a lot of these, defense departments or governmental departments.
Mm-hmm.
So they feel like, well, why not? We'll just go in and take it all over, and then we'll have it all, So, but.
Well, over in Brazil, it's like when they're talking about these crime rings and stuff, I don't know if these actually differ that much to their government, because I think their government's pretty corrupt over there, isn't it? I mean,
I would think the same thing, Jason. Yeah. Yep.
It's like, how do you know which ones are the criminals and which ones aren't? I just know that it's not a place you want to be right now, that's for sure, because it's a mess.
We're gonna take it over and have our kind of communism over here or whatever.
Yep.
Well, it was a couple of years ago when they were having the Olympics over there, and they mm-hmm. said that the filth and everything like that there, they couldn't handle that many people and just that, I guess, that many extra people. And it was just it was a cesspool. It was horrible. The living conditions were not sanitary at all, unclean. A lot of people ended up sick just because of the conditions. I guess it was a mess.
I got a question for y'all, and it has I as you were talking, Jason, this just came into my mind. I was watching a squirrel play in the tree, and I guess I just got squirreled while I was sitting here thinking. Can you name one third world country that's inhabited by white people, where it's like a European government? I'm serious. Can you think of in history of one? And I was just thinking, you were talking about just the sanitary conditions and that sort of thing, and I was running through my mind thinking, as far as our people go. And I don't want to come off. There's plenty of white trash and stuff like that. But I'm just in my mind, I'm thinking about governments and authorities and that sort of thing. And if you look at pretty much everywhere else outside of westernized Christendom, it's a third world country.
It is.
I mean, it just really is. If you call it whatever you want, second tier country, third world country, or whatever, it's just. Cultures are different. And, I know it was a couple months ago, I think, Jason, you ran the melting pot myth and the newsletter. And that really is, I don't know of a stronger weapon that the enemy's used against us than bringing in these third world cultures and literally trying to pollute our people. I mean, I just,
well, that's
I don't
what,
know.
Yeah,
we talk about
They pollute it. They try to bring it down. They try to introduce that melting pot. But it's like our people, wherever they went, you look at the architecture, you look at the buildings, you look at the streets, and we go in,
yep.
And our people historically went in and built something up and made it nice.
And one of the weapons the enemy uses is they mirror image everything, right? Like it's that deception. It's the author of deception, Satan. And if you look at what our people did in Christendom, and I don't care if it was the Dutch or the British is the one that comes to mind, but the Dutch or the British or the French or whoever, Christendom, wherever they went, they built nations, they built infrastructure, they built sanitation, they built transportation, roads with trains and that sort of thing. Everywhere they went, they made it better. And the mirror image of that, of that colonial building, is what has happened to us over the last, what, 6-7 decades that the enemy's used against us with this forced migration, this forced immigration. And it's the exact opposite. It's Satan, our enemy, using what we did for good, the exact opposite of that. I mean, if you really want to stop, I don't know if you guys have ever thought about this, but all the enemy's really doing is nation building. They're just they're trying to make our nation and build it into these third world countries. It's just the exact opposite, and that's a powerful weapon. It's just a mirror image of what our people did for good.
Yeah. Well, you're back to they serve their master, yep. Who is destruction, deception. When you see, you kind of barely get back to, if you boil it all down and where the rubber meets the road, it becomes that fruit test thing, whatsoever things are. You know, think on these things, and these are the outputs of someone who serves God. And you know, the forefathers said that our laws over here were only suitable for a, you know, Christian people. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's that ability there. When you try to bring in the whole melting pot philosophy and everything else, it won't work. And the other thing about, you were talking about third world countries, Will, and I think it's interesting to note that every third world country is in pretty much a state of chaos, civil war at all times. I mean, it's tenuous at best if they have any peace. How long does it last for? You know, it's not like, oh, well, we've had peace for 50 years. They can't hardly make 5 years, you know. So it's like... it's a pretty, and you know, that's basically, as we bring more foreigners into our land, as they've continued to come in, that's where we're at. We're in a state of upheaval. We're in a state of practical civil war, where things that we've done to take care of people, things that we've done to help our own citizens, have become twisted and used against us as an enslavement, as an entitlement, as all these kinds of things that destroy countries, you know. And where God is and where God is served, peace reigns there, not this, you know, mess that we see.
Well said.
I think you can. and it's so much about the money when you look at it. We see all this. Money and power is just constantly swapping to do whatever they can do to create a civil war, create unrest. And that's like, my son said, well, I think Ukraine, the whole deal with Ukraine is it's just a money laundering, you know, scam.
Huh.
And really,
he's right.
As we continue to go down the road, it's like, yeah, that's pretty much what it is, power swapping money scam. So
I saw it's so funny how they telegraph everything. I mean, they just tell you what they're going to do. And Zelensky came out this week and he was addressing European nations on Tuesday. And he told the European supporters of the Ukraine that he needs their financial support so that they can fight Russia for 2 or 3 more years. And I look at time frames on this, and you know, it's not until we win, it's not until final victory, it was a very specific time frame of 2 or 3 more years. And I look at that and I think, well, that's probably not an accident, you know, that he says this. And I started thinking about other things that we know that have been telegraphed to us of what they're going to do. Well, we know Poland, we know France especially, Germany have all come out and said that within the next 4 years, they have to be battle ready. Their hospitals have to be hardened, so they're treating whatever it was, 2,000 soldiers a day, all of this sort of stuff. So kind of out of the blue, I guess, right? France starts preparing, Germany starts preparing, Poland starts preparing, and it all fits in the window of what Zelensky said, that he needs to be able to fight for 2 or 3 more years. Well, my question is, what does he know that we're not getting told? Has he been told that he needs to stand alone for 2 more years, 3 more years, and then France and Germany and Poland and these European nations will align with him? I don't know. That's what I thought when I read that article.
Yeah, and the first thing that I thought of is war is a racket. And I thought about that. Schmidley Butler speech that just, I mean, it's like, boom, yep, this is what is going on. And I thought the same thing, Will. I was thinking about that, 2 to 3 years, and then France has got 2 to 3 years to be able to, you know, put, what, a thousand wounded a day in hospitals, or there, was that France?
It was France and Germany.
And Germany,
But France is the one that's been on the front. If you remember, even going back to this summer, we talked about they were telling all of their folks to have food and water and medical supplies, and then they transition into the hospitals and the water structure within their country. I mean, they're ramping up for war is what they're doing. And Poland's doing the same thing. Germany's doing the same thing. And now you get this little Jew, Zelensky, who just arbitrarily tells some European folks that he was meeting with, yeah, I need you guys to help me out for 2 or 3 more years.
Yep.
Go ahead, Tim.
Well, and when you look at the 2 or 3 year thing that we're talking about, isn't it interesting that France right now is in, if you look at the interior country upheaval going on in France, I mean, there's a lot of unhappiness going on in France, right, with the body politic, with the leadership, with what's happening as far as, regulations and all kinds of stuff. And it's just the same playbook page. Okay, we got to get this simmered down or we're going to lose control, so let's have a war. So that's basically what this is. This is that, I call it war unification, proclamation. I mean, by doing this, it's like, okay, guys, we need to set all these interior problems aside and get ready because, you know, this is coming down the pipe. And it's what they do is an external focus rather than allowing people that time to focus internally on what's messed up at home. So, I mean, we see it here, we see it in France, we see it in Germany. Anytime that happens, we need a war. And not to mention, they will make money off of that. So it's a
great way to get people to forget about the raping of the little 10-year-old girl, right? When you say Russia is coming to kill us all, you know, it doesn't matter if it's the truth. It's not the truth, but it is a way to, like you said, to align people up with a common enemy, so to speak.
Yeah. It creates a unification or galvanizing effect on the population that allows them to continue behind the scenes to do their damage or, you know, bring about, practically every single thing in our own country that has been damning or destructive to us was done as a result of the war effort needs this, you know, whether World War II, Vietnam, well, we've got to do this. I mean, otherwise our people are going to suffer over there or our, you know, and so it's, we see that going on all the time.
I mean, look at what happened to us after 9/11, right? You know, with just the, in my opinion, the total sellout of privacy, and just I'm trying to think of a nice way of, you know, just the ripping up of the Constitution and everybody, you know, as far as the elected officials, everybody was for it. I think maybe Ron Paul was the only guy who actively spoke against it. And look at where it's gotten us today, you know, where these flock cameras and all kinds of things that are just data mining anybody who travels up and down the roads. And this all came out of the Patriot Act. It's a great tool of enslavement.
Yeah. And they always hang a really great name on it, like Patriot Act.
Yeah. Right.
Instead of calling it the Anti-Patriot Act, you know, or the Anti-America Act. Now, let's see. We got to have a good moniker to put on there to, you know, hopefully, if you just, well, that'd be a good thing. I mean, yeah. So the name's good.
Well, the phone number to call in is not, it's 307-745-5913, or you can call 970-484-5213. I just wanted to get that out. Somebody sent me a message and said that they wanted the number. So if you feel like calling, call in by all means.
Wow.
Well, and the next one that was on our list was the Chinese Communist Party making millions in UK over government contract in migrant hotels. And I thought, wow, that one was interesting because I hadn't thought of that. But I did do a little bit of digging into it, and the numbers were kind of astonishing. I didn't realize that they were spending between $7 to $8 million a day on they call them asylum seekers, but border jumpers, illegal aliens, whatever politically incorrect criminal term you want to use. Criminal. Yeah, there you go. I like that. I was looking at, I ended up looking at these three hotels that are that are all owned and controlled by the Chinese Communist Party. And they have made, they're saying like between $300 and $400 million off of housing. And I was thinking, okay, we're talking about some slums, but we're talking about like Holiday Inns that are over there in the UK that are owned by the Communist Party of China that are completely rented out to criminals. And it's like, wow. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that was interesting when I was looking at that, it was I didn't realize that the Chinese party was the ones, the Chinese Communist Party is the one that's selling them these or giving them those, they call them the super dinghies that they can get across the borders with. So they don't want them over in China. They don't want to bring them over there and house them. They want them to go over to the UK and the UK to, you know, spend 145 euros a day per asylum seeker. That's a lot of money. $6 to $8 million a day a lot of money. And they said it just blew up during COVID. 2019, I think, is when they're saying that it really started to explode. And that's been going on for a long time. That's pretty crazy. I don't know a lot about it, but I just looked at some of the numbers, and the numbers were like, dang, these really tell a story.
Yes. Well, at least they're ecologically sound. They're recycling the super dinghies. I mean, there was video out there showing them loading them up on a boat, taking them back over so they could reuse them. You know, talk about weird.
For some reason, it jumped in my mind. I know we're talking about the Chinese Communist Party, but I started thinking about the Democrat Party, which is just the American Communist Party, and how they used to bus voters into voting.
Right.
And it was, you know, they would go pick them up and take them to the polls. Well, it's kind of what the Chinese are doing with all these brown people. You know, they're providing them transportation to get them to kind of the same MO. I don't know. Just a thought. I will tell you, though, it is obvious the Chinese enslavement process far extends beyond their border, because think about that—the amount of money that they are making off of the British taxpayer, because that's that's who's paying for this. That's who's paying for the dinghies. That's who's paying for the hotel rooms. And the Chinese are just getting richer and richer. And the British citizen just keeps going further and further down, doesn't it?
Well, they're taking their money. And then when, you know, you get a 14-year-old girl that's raped by, you know, one of these dirt bags, the hatred is building. You can tell.
Yeah. No, it is, for sure. And, you know, as evident as what we talked about in Ireland last week, where they burned one of these hotels to the ground, I think I'm right in saying the same thing happened in England.
I think they didn't get
very much press conference. But I think the same thing happened a few months ago in England, and here's to hoping it continues to happen.
Yeah, and they've basically got people paying for their own. They've got them paying for their own, you know,
demise.
Destabilizing of their own economy. I mean, they're basically taking your money and putting it into their war effort, which that's all that is. I mean, it's just one of those situations where they're using those people for, what do you want to call it, cannon fodder or dock troops.
Exactly.
I mean.
Well, they're over there. They're destroying a white society by bringing in these whatever they are. I mean, camel jockeys.
Put bad
Ethiopians. Well, you know, we're on the radio. I'm trying to be a little bit kosher. I mean, these guys, and you got the government saying, hey, you guys, the good citizens of the UK, you got to pay for it. And the Communist Party of China is getting rich off it. I mean, it's just like, wow. When you start looking at the different pieces and everything like that, which we know who's all behind it. I mean, it's just becoming more obvious that it's like a chess game to them.
Yeah. Yep. You know, you mentioned Smedley Butler, but I think it was William Guy Carr that wrote the book Pawns in the Game, right? And I think more and more of our people are waking up and realizing they're just pawns in a game. And they're fast learning who the chess master is, who's moving the pieces around the board, and it's not their elected officials. It's the people who have paid for their elected officials. And they wear funny little hats and live in tunnels in New York City.
Yeah, that is correct.
I don't know if y'all had a chance. I didn't see it until this morning early. I didn't get a chance to share it with y'all, but we were talking about the Ukraine and all of that. I guess the Pentagon has green lighted the providing Tomahawk missiles to Zelensky in the Ukraine. That came across, you know, a lot of times when they try to hide things in the news cycle, they'll do it Friday after 5 o'clock. And that's, I guess, what happened with this is the Pentagon yesterday late green lighted giving the Ukraine Tomahawks. And this is something that I thought Trump said we weren't going to do, but it's sure shaping up to look like that's what we're going to do. And that just made me think about that 2 or 3 year timeline that Zelensky threw out there. Again, I would think that the ability to use Tomahawk missiles over there in the Ukraine would probably prolong this thing for a little while.
Yeah, I would agree with you. We got a caller on the line. Let's go to the phone lines real quick. Hello, caller.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I was just listening to you guys talking about the preparations and the different folks getting ready. Germany hospitals and kind of preparing for war, which is always a good idea to be prepared, right? Shouldn't be wanting that, but we should always be prepared. But I was thinking also that timeline ends up about the same whenever we'll be getting a new president. So I don't know if y'all talked about that earlier.
You're right, Josh.
Yeah.
So, and you know, I find myself struggling with it. So many things are happening. It's happening so quickly under Trump. And it's our we were raised up to be critical, to be watching, you know, what's the rest of the story, right? And but also all these things that are happening, we have been praying for years and years, right? And so can't dismiss the fact that it is answered prayer. And you got to be cautious and, you know, leery, but also, too, regardless of the fact, you know, the ruling or whatever just happened so they could put prayer back in school. That's something we've been praying about, you know, and all the different, you know, welfare reforms and all the things that are happening at an unbelievably fast rate are answered prayers. So we need to keep praying and definitely lift up the ones that are in charge right now that are pushing this movement and, you know, pray that it sticks, that it's not just something that happens and then goes away. You know, like this is another chance, but also a test for us. You know, God giving us all this, he's like, what you going to do? You know, and it's up to us to continue to build and to not give up that momentum that he's given us right now. I mean, it's an exercise in faith.
I agree. For sure. Yeah.
I was listening to a Joe Rogan or part of a Joe Rogan podcast with Elon Musk, and he was speaking to the finances of the country and the deficit, and quoting behind him, he said that just the interest paid on our debts yearly is more than our entire military budget. Mm-hmm. Just the interest on our notes is more than we spend on all our military. And it's just saying how that it's not fixable in the current state, right? Math is one thing that is a constant, right? And I'm not saying it's outside of God's control because he can do anything, but mathematically speaking, this isn't something that this system is broken and it can't be brought back. And it's just interesting to hear, you know, all the different death threats and, you know, how that all ramped up on him whenever he was investigating. He was talking about the people that hadn't been born yet and the people that have been dead for 100 years. They were still getting Social Security checks, and it was just hundreds of billions of dollars of fraud, you know, that he was trying to push to get into. And they did a lot of good, don't get me wrong, but it resonated with me, you know, with him saying that the current system can't be fixed, right? It's got to be changed.
Yeah.
I agree 100%.
So do I. Mm-hmm.
And most of the time, how does that happen?
War.
By war.
War. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, well, and, you know, I mean, you think about it, it's like, I remember Pastor Peters, you know, talking about it, and it's like, you know, what about, you know, okay, you know, the old phrase, it was, you know, we owe it to ourselves. Well, if we owe it to ourselves, why don't we just cancel the debt?
Right.
Right. Yep. Why can't you just draw
one? Take a big change.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, you guys
have a good day. Thanks for calling, Josh. Appreciate it. Appreciate the call.
Thinking about what Josh was saying about it's going to take a war to change it, and he's right. I think we all agree with that. But if we just go to war with these other nations and the same old people put new governments back in those nations, nothing really changes. Right. And what I think, and I know Tim, me and you, Jason, all three of us have talked about this. There seems to be a great awakening towards the money changers,
right?
In this world, where people are seeing the folks that are actually putting these people in these powers, you know, they're moving these pawns. So I guess my question is it inevitable that if we see this change? And Josh is right. I mean, you know, I'm seeing things in my life that, you know, I remember 30 years ago being told by some old guys I knew at some of the gun shows of you'll know war is coming when they cut the food stamps off. And I started looking, you know, and thinking about that this week of they're seriously going to let the food stamps be cut off. Like they're not funding this out of desperation. I think the current administration is going to let this die. They're going to let it get cut off. And it may be for political purposes, but it doesn't matter. I think you see resolve in the White House right now. But at the end of the day, that's not going to get us to where we need to be. The only way that we will get to where we need to be is by calling out those powers that are in the shadows. And I guess this is not a news story as much as I'm just going to ask for y'all's opinion. What are the chances as we move forward in the next 3 years, 4 years, 5 years towards that 2030 timeline? What are the chances of Israel, the state of Israel, remaining as it is today? Y'all see that? Y'all see that change coming?
I think it's going to happen.
A lot of awakening. Yeah. Something's got to give, right? Yeah. I mean, so. I think there's an underlying battle going on right now, and that's the distraction of all this other stuff. I mean, you know, going on all over the place. And the distraction from the battle that's taking place here at home. They really want people's focus somewhere else, anywhere else. This is fine. So we've talked about that, but we've got huge debts. We've got the Democrats are basically trying to stir up a civil war here at home. And, you know, the problem with a lot of these battles, when we look at it, is it's a movement or whatever. Who's driving the bus? You know, where's it going? Is it a godly bus driver, a godly outcome, or is it going to be detoured into, you know, a chasm or a canyon or something? I mean, there's prayer is our biggest, most necessary weapon at this point. You know, so while you guys were talking there, I popped into my head. I'm going to go ahead and read it, but Psalms 5, 8 through 10 says, Lord, lead me in your righteousness because of my enemy. Make your way straight before me, for there is nothing trustworthy in their mouth. Their inward part is destruction itself. Their throat is an open grave. They flatter with their tongue. Make them pay, God. Have them fall by their own schemes. Scatter them in the multitude of their wrongdoing, for they are rebellious against you. I was like, you know, that's what we're seeing here. I mean, it's like, and it's like, wow, Lord, we need to get that way straight, you know, because that's what they're doing. There's a lot of them out there who, you know, it's destruction.
Yeah. Yep. Well, and I'm just encouraged by so many people that are waking up to that too, and they're waking up to, you know, who the enemy is and that unseen third hand. So that's encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys know about this? Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Jess.
What do you guys know about this Russia oil refinery that blew up over in, I think it was Hungary? They're saying that was, I think that was one of the biggest oil refineries in Hungary. And they said that the crude prices jumped, oil prices jumped. And then there was talk of it being a terrorist attack as well. I don't really know a lot
about it. Viktor Orban.
Yeah.
Yeah. Viktor Orban, who's the leader of Hungary, he incredibly conservative guy, Christian man, Orthodox Christian, but Christian man. And if you remember when all of Europe started being invaded, Hungary doesn't have an immigration problem. Because they just put their military on order. Yeah. And they said, you cross, you get killed.
Yeah.
And then they killed some. And you know what? People started going around Hungary and saying, yeah, it's not worth getting killed. So, I mean, it's amazing how that works, right? But so that's the kind of government that Hungary has. And if you guys remember, I think it was over the summer. I'll get to the oil refinery. I promise, Jason. But over the summer, Orban came out and his government said, yeah, we're not going to do this gay pride, transgender crap, and there will be no parade. And they tried the parade, and then that failed too. But, you know, turns out they were serious as that about that as they were immigration. And so, I mean, it's Hungary is a very conservative country. And because of religious views, they have aligned themselves with the Russian Orthodox Church. And I would say they're probably allies of Russia. Well, they have taken a very neutral stance towards the Ukrainian-Russian war, Hungary has. And this week, Viktor Orban, addressing the same summit where Zelensky was asking for money for 2 or 3 years, he called on Europe to begin peaceful negotiations with Moscow and said that Europe should start reducing their support of the Ukraine, of Kiev, and this government. He went on to say that the Zelensky government was illegitimate, that it wasn't a proper government anymore because they had suspended elections. He said a lot of things. And then a couple of days later, their biggest oil refinery in Hungary blew up. And what this was a transmission pipeline of Russian crude oil that was coming through Hungary toward the refinery and going out other places in Europe. So I look at this, you know, we were talking about criminal organizations and we were talking about cartels and that sort of thing at the beginning of the show. This is, to me, like almost like a mafia tactic of if you come out and speak against the Zionist-controlled Ukraine and their war, this is what happens to you. So I think it was a terrorist attack. And Orban came out and said that this was an external attack, that, you know, this wasn't an industrial accident or anything like that. But Jason, you pegged it dead on, man. The result of this is just incredibly high crude prices in Europe right now and what will be a shortage of oil products there for doggone sure. So it's war. Yeah, it's just war is what it is.
With winter coming up, and, you know, and Orban said that the Staats Halambada refinery, which is the one that was blown up, is one of the 5 most important strategic industrial plants in Hungary. So, you know, that's wild. I mean, you know, so if you were choosing a point to attack, would one of the 5 most strategic industrial plants in that country be on your list? Probably so. You know?
You're right about winter coming up, and, you know, also, you know, tanks and trucks don't run on wishes and dreams. You know, they run on petroleum products, and this just, you know, goes to even cripple that more. So it is, I mean, it is an act of war is what it is. And you see the sides kind of lining up on where everybody's going. And I go back to that 2 or 3 year timeline and what France and Germany and Poland and these other countries have been doing. And we should probably pay attention to that as a nation. You know, I think that that is their plan. I don't remember what it was. I think it was called the 2030 plan. But do you guys remember hearing about that a few years back? They were talking about a 2030 plan. I don't know if it was the United Nations or what it was, but it sure seems like we're heading that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think this is absolutely right. So,
yep. I meant to say this earlier, but, you know, we were talking about England and, have you guys engaged in a conversation with anybody? I mean, I know, at least I think I know where you guys are going to stand on this, but do you think people legitimately believe it's just a coincidence that Christendom, all of the white European nations, the United States and Canada were all invaded at the same time by coincidence?
No, I don't think there's any way possible that it was a coincidence.
But do you think there are people out there that believe that? Oh, it's the biggest coincidence in the world.
Probably.
Do you think people even realize what's going on in places like Ireland and Britain and places like that?
No, I don't think that there is. I don't think people. I've talked to people about what's going on over there, and they don't have a clue. I've talked to people about stuff that's happened over in South Africa. They don't have a clue. I mean, they really. There's so much stuff, and I mean, they really try to suppress a lot of what it is, you know. And they, I don't think people take it serious. You know, I mean, it's happening. It's happening all over. It's happening in, you know, Canada. All of the white European founded. Nations is under attack,
yep.
And
it is.
They're bringing, and it's foreigners that are attacking. It's not white people attacking white people. It's not white. It's not our people that are invading other European nations. It is. I mean, it's pretty obvious. It's
And I think the truth, you know, the enemy is. They have had so long as far as practice of controlling that information and suppressing that information and massaging it and spinning it into something else that they have just done an incredible job of what should be right in your face, right? That's the magician's trick that we've talked about of, you know, we are – rightfully so, worried about our own southern border and the own invaders here in our country. But in this conversation that you've heard with all of our elected officials talking about our southern border and the invasion and these illegal aliens are all through the country, I haven't heard of one that said this is a global-wide phenomenon or invasion or whatever you want to call it. And that's really what it is. When you stop and think about our people across the world, if you really want to look at this, this seems like a major push by the enemy to break the backs of our people, to make us so worried or so caught up in what's going on. Tim, you were talking about it in our own streets. That makes me wonder, what is it going to look like on the worldwide stage that we're going to be so caught up, fighting Somalis in Minnesota in our own streets, you know, what's it going to look like worldwide? I think it's on purpose, and that's something prayerfully I'm asking for discernment on of what is coming. Like Josh was saying, we should be prepared, and you know, we should be prepared for anything, but we should also be prayerfully considering what is it that we need to be preparing for. And I don't think it's a mistake that we've had this global invasion. And it makes me think they're diverting our attention for something that's coming down the pipe. I just don't know what it is.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely happening. I mean, but I think just the fact that, what do you want to call it? Watchers are out there on the wall saying, hey, watch out. You know, I mean, that gives us a leg up if people are listening to it. And, that 2030, you mentioned the 2030 plan, and, you know, that was 17 economic indicators from the United Nations. And I remember somebody, and I don't know whether who it was, one of the people I admired, there's a few, but they were talking about the fact that you can't make people successful, but what you can do is pull successful people down to the lowest level.
Mm.
And that's, whenever they attempt to do those things on a global scale or a nation, which is what we're seeing is a global attack, what you do is you don't put the lowest denominator to the highest denominator. You bring the highest down, you know, and it kind of goes back to that verse in the Bible where Christ said, the poor you have with you always. You know, there's certain people out there that, no matter what you do for them, they are what they are, you know, and they like to wallow in their own trough or slop, you know, and we see that going on. And when you serve God, he lifts you up. we can't do it. It's a God thing for sure.
Yeah, and well, let's move on. One of you men shared a video, and it was this English woman sums it up. They are pushing us into doing something that we don't want to do, and basically, this lady was in tears, just crying about the crime. Thoughts?
Right.
I think people are more and more over there openly when she's talking about. I'll tell you what I thought about when I watched that video, Jason, is the wrath of the awakened Saxon. Of, you know, when she talks about, it seems like this government and these they're getting pushed to do something that they don't want to do. I think what she's talking about is just taking the law into their own hands. They're going to do it. And they're going to protect themselves. At the end of the day, we all know that is a God-given right. You know, it's the Second Amendment and the right to life. That has nothing to do with governments. It has the right to do with I'm going to live. I'm going to have babies. I'm going to make sure the generations continue to go in my life, in my family. And I think it's getting to that point in places like England where they realize they're living in a genocide. They're being exterminated. They're being raped and killed out of existence. And I think something very, what would you call it, Tim? Something very deep within them, animalistic. I don't know if that's the right thing I'm saying, is they're going to survive. And I think that's primal. There you go. And I think that's what this woman was, that's why she was in tears, Jason, is I think they have a very proper society. England is a very proper society, and they've gotten to the point now of where they're going to choose violence.
Yeah.
Because that is what they're left with.
Well, and they're now, from what I seen, and I don't know if it was this lady or if it was another lady, I can't remember, but it was, it was either in the comments or something, but I mean, they were just talking about the fear and what they have to deal with. And, you know, there's people that are leaving the country because of the violence, and they don't want their children to grow up in the country because of these illegals that are coming and, you know, stabbing people and killing people and raping the women and raping the children. I mean, it's horrible what's going on. I think that they said that the crime rate in 1 year, the stabbings went up over 20%. I mean, it's gotten to be to the point where they're very concerned about it.
It's a situation, and as far as an observer's point of view, think about the fact that, you know, they've been disarmed and everything else, but they're, at the end of the day, there's no such thing as disarmed, because obviously they're getting stabbed, they're getting attacked. So you have to fight back with whatever you have, and once that civilized attitude breaks down of the police will protect us, it's getting nastier over there. We've already seen in Ireland, like we've already spoke about, that a hotel burned down. The weapon was a match. There's rocks and clubs and different things like that. And if you read some of the stories from World War II and the communist takeovers and things, you find out, look it up. Those people were hating themselves because they'd given up their weapons, because they'd given up the ability to defend themselves. And, God gives us information about taking care of ourselves and how we're to be armed and how we're to be, stand with Him. And these are the kinds of things that happen when you don't. So, all I can say is the proof's in the pudding and we're looking at it. I mean, it's going on all over in places like that. So the reason it's not more prevalent here is because, like Pastor Peter said a long time ago, our people came over here from those lands and said, I don't think so. There's still a remnant here that just is absolutely unbendable in those regards.
I think I'm going to go back to the Ireland thing just real fast. And I know, Jason, we're at the top of the hour. Do we need to take a break?
No. Go ahead. We're good.
All right. One of the things that, you know, you were talking about our people, Tim, and in my mind, what I've thought about many times is here in this country, in places like Portland and Seattle and Chicago, and we've seen the cops really side against our people, right? I mean, they've gone after the wrong side of the protesters, so to speak, and even going back to some things that happened on the East Coast with anyways, what I saw that happened in Dublin, what I saw were the cops standing on the sidewalks watching their countrymen go administer justice, and they didn't do anything to stop it. And I think that that's fantastic, and certainly heartwarming, so to speak. But how long does that get to go on before you see those governments that have allowed this invasion to happen stand those people down or fire those people or whatever and replace them with the very people that they've brought in, the invaders? And I personally think that that is a real possibility, that we have seen many news stories here in the United States of these illegal aliens who have been made cops and that sort of thing. And that's just a handful. But I'm telling you guys, I think that in some of these European countries, especially, if you can look it up, I mean, one of the things, and I was thinking about this week and reading about it in Munich, Germany, in Bavaria, about 20% of the police force are Turkish people. They're not Germans. Dang. They're Turks. And that is a major city in Germany. And, you know, you think about Germany and Oktoberfest and beer and the oopah music. Well, that's Munich. That's where Oktoberfest happened. And 1 out of 5 cops are brown Middle Easterners, Turks, that are, you know, Muslim by culture and that sort of thing. The reason I bring all that up is a desperate government very well could use these useful idiots that they've brought here, that they've put on social programs and that sort of thing, for their own benefit. And I think our people need to know that too. You know, today they're the immigrant that we despise and we want out. Tomorrow they very well may be the foot soldier for the very people who brought them in here.
Well, yep. And the thought occurred to me too when you were talking about that, about these, you know, police officers that are standing by and watching the, you know, the citizens execute justice. You know, that's fine and dandy, but I'd feel a lot better if the cops were fighting, you know, side by side with me administering justice. You know, because I mean, you know, these people gotta realize that, you know, at any moment, you know, if they're just standing by watching, they could be like, hey, okay, arrest that guy there. You know, let's make an example out of him. And we've got to shut this down, which I think that they realize that, you know, they can't do that. But I think that it's definitely, I mean, it might not be in the police officer's mind that's sitting there watching it, but the higher ups could be, you know, have different plans, and they could change at any moment, if that makes sense.
Makes total sense.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, and it isn't like they haven't used foreign actors before. I mean, during the Revolutionary War, they sent Hessians over here, you know.
The Hessians,
And people with a different belief than we have.
Explain a little bit about that. There's a lot of people that don't know, and I'm drawn for a good explanation. But, just briefly, Tim, or Will, I don't care.
Okay, well, the Hessians were sent over here as mercenaries during the colonial wars, and they were basically... It's very interesting to me because they were predominantly Lutherans, okay? And they were
subverted as far as religious practices at that time, but basically the Brits said, well, you guys can practice whatever religion you want if you go over there and fight. That was part of their, what do you want to call it? That was the carrot. And they sent them over here to put down the uprising of our war, you know. And they brought their religious beliefs with them. And a lot of them turncoated once they got here.
Mm-hmm.
Because of their Lutheran and Calvinist backgrounds. They were like, wait a minute. These people are pretty much fighting for exactly what we want. But, you know, they weren't Catholics. They weren't. But it went on. They brought them over here. They paid them. They used them as shock troops and as that kind of stuff in the country to put down the colonial, you know, uprising, the trash, as the Brits wanted to call us at the time. So there was. But it's been done before. I mean, that's not unusual to do that. So, you know, they were considered at that time, they were very big warriors. I mean, as far as for their discipline and that kind of stuff, they made up approximately, I think it was like, what, 20-30% of the forces that were over here. And they were sent in wherever they thought they were going to lose or a lot of people were going to die. Well, they sent them in. They used them for, like I say, shock troops or cannon fodder. But, yeah. So that kind of went on. But it became a matter of faith once again, which honestly, it always does. It comes down to that. I mean, you know, when you're serving God, God makes a way. And he sure did. Our country was, there came America. So,
The counterpart of that, as far as the Hessians, and they were fierce professional soldiers, and that's what they were known for, that region under the king, that the Hessian king there in Germany. But I think a lot of folks remember, maybe on purpose, because who wants to be aligned with the French, but the Americans, the colonialists, depended heavily on the king of France at the time. Including the French Navy, French soldiers, military advisors, and French weapons. So I don't think we ever really look at the American Revolution as a world war, but it really was. It was a world war being fought for New Jerusalem. And it carried on, too, where it, you know, the French aligned with the colonists during the American Revolution. You know, you had Canadians coming down and fighting as British subjects. With the British, you had the Hessian soldiers fighting with the British, and in many ways, this carried on into the American Civil War too. With you know, Lincoln's War of Northern Aggression, there the French again came onto our soil and aligned themselves for the Confederates. The Germans aligned themselves with the Federal troops again. So it's unique when you look at it. And what's happened on our soil? I don't think our history books do a good enough job of really telling us the real story.
No. Well, and you had the War of 1812.
The War of 1812.
You know,
yeah.
People don't talk about that. That was the British coming in again. I mean, they were.
Yep.
They jumped back in and wanted round two. So yes, there was definitely some conflict there.
And even before that, you know, the French and Indian War, where you had three or four nations again, right, fighting over commerce and who had rights to what. And there's been a lot of history. We don't think about the American nation being a contested piece of ground. But, man, it really was, and in many cases still is, and not just in the Northeast and, like, the Ohio territories, but down where we're at, you know, Colorado and Texas and even Nebraska. I mean, you know, these were these territories were fought for, you know, the state of Texas has had six flags fly over it as a nation and as a colony and now as a state. But, I mean it's interesting when you look at it, and we shouldn't be so dumb as Americans to believe that won't happen again and that you won't have foreign nations wanting a piece of this pie. We know, I mean, shoot, the Chinese are already here buying up land, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, and I think the other thing to realize is when you begin to study into it and you study your history is you realize it never really stopped. I mean, the focus may have changed. It may be have became an economic war or a war of attrition or a political battle, but it goes on. You know, it has never really stopped here at home. I mean, just because you didn't have guys marching down the street with guns slung on their shoulder didn't mean that there wasn't battles going on. And
it's a weird thing that, and I may be going down the wrong alley here, Jason, but I really, you know, the enemy wants us to believe that little chunk of land over there in the sandbox that they call Israel is the most contested piece of ground in the world. It's not. It's not.
Right.
If you really, I think we've made a fair argument right now, but if you really want to look at it, the North American continent, and I mean Canada and the United States, I, at least in the last couple of centuries, has been the most contested piece of ground. And what Tim was talking about, it may not be a kinetic war where we're shooting at each other, but certainly that has happened. But economically, the warfare for this land, for what we have here, I would say this is probably the most contested chunk of land in the world. And that's for a reason. And it goes back to this being the promised land of New Jerusalem and the powers and principalities of this world wanting to lay claim to it.
I agree.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah.
Well, and I think when you look at I was reading through some of this SNAP stuff. I want to just kind of jump back on that, but hold on. I'm trying to get my numbers in front of me, but you know, there's a big federal judge thing going on SNAP benefits, and they're trying to order the Trump administration to pay to cover SNAP benefits for November with emergency funding. And there's only $5.25 billion. That's with a B, in that emergency fund. And that's not even enough to fully cover the month of November food assistance program, which is over $9 billion. So we're talking about, you know, earlier we were talking about a few million a month here to house these illegals and everything else, but that doesn't take into the viewpoint of $9 billion for SNAP benefits. I mean, that's just, and I don't remember the exact number. I had it wrote down, but it's like 40 million people, I think, on SNAP in this country. It's like, what is going on? You know, I mean, that's a lot of locusts. So, and maybe they all aren't. I mean, you know, but it's just one of those things. So, yeah. I mean, most of us can't hardly even conceptualize what $1 billion is, let alone nine. So it's just, yeah, wild, I think. And another warfare point.
Jason, can I tell my quick food stamp story?
Oh, absolutely. Go ahead.
Okay. This is going back way, way back. I don't know if you guys remember anybody that ever worked any kind of retail grocery store back when, back in the day, food stamps used to come in a coupon book, and it looked like Monopoly Money. You know, you would tear them out, and they were different colors for the different denominations, and, you know, it was redeemable for food and all this sort of stuff. But when I was 15 years old, I went to work at a little mom-and-pop gas station, and man, I got such an education. I say gas station, grocery store. I got such an education at that grocery store. It was my first real taste of the world. And so I go to work at this grocery store, and one day I'm out picking up buggies from the parking lot. And I should tell people this is in Atlanta, Georgia. There's a lot of black folks there and different culture there. So I'm out in the parking lot and I'm picking up buggies and getting it back inside the grocery store. And I see this lady standing over in the parking lot, a black lady, and she's got a baby on her hip and a couple more running around her feet. And I see her handing over some some cash, some currency to this black guy who I know is a wino because he slept in the parking lot of the grocery store. And she's handing him over money, and he's handing her this big coupon book of food stamps. And I'm sitting here watching this, you know, and part of my training at this grocery store had been, you know, food stamp fraud and all this sort of stuff. And so I go back inside and I tell the manager, I said, hey, I just saw this and, you know, I think it's some kind of fraud or something. And he told me, no, that's not fraud. That's the real American economy. And I said, what do you mean there? And he said, well, you see, that man gets food stamps from the government to buy groceries, but he doesn't need groceries. He needs booze, and food stamps won't buy booze. That woman has about four kids, and she needs more food stamps. She has cash that she's getting from your taxpayers' money that she doesn't need because she's getting all of these food stamps. So she's giving him half the cash for his food stamp value so that he can go buy what he needs and she can get what he needs or what she needs. That's the real economy. And at about 15 years old, I realized food stamps is a racket.
Yeah.
Because this is all a racket. And I'm really learning how the grocery stores process food stamps and that sort of thing. It's all a racket. And that was one of my first wake ups of we shouldn't be engaging in this at all. Your tax money, I was barely even paying taxes at, you know, making $60 a week or whatever it was I was making. But I'm telling you, and I really mean what I'm about to say here, there is nothing compassionate or charitable about keeping someone on the plantation of slavery with food stamps. That is, if you really stop and think about it as a Christian, the last thing we need to do, because we have weaponized and enabled a government to enslave people from cradle to grave. Let it die, let it go away and be erased from history as far as I'm concerned. I'm willing to fight a war in the street about that. I just want to throw that out there. I'm tired of paying for winos and dependent mothers to have more and more babies that don't have my best interest at heart. I'm tired of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would agree. It is a racket.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't realize, and just talking with so I guess we'll talk about this a little bit, but there is I don't know how many, I don't have the numbers in front of me. I don't have any idea how many people are on food stamps or SNAP or whatever. They got all these, they got federal programs and then they've got state programs and this and that. But, I was shocked by, several people that, you know, I had overheard and they were talking about, you know, what are we going to do? And I'm like, what do you mean? Well, we're not getting our check. And it's like, okay. I don't know how I'm going to make my car payment. Cause I'm going to have to buy groceries. And I'm like, how about go to work, get a job? Can't do that. Cause I make too much money. Then they'd cut me off of the program. And that's what has enabled so many people to do is to not have a job and not go to work is because they are getting too much money, you know, as a handout. And, you know, at the same time, it's
slavery.
Like, you know, yeah. And I know people that are out there that, you know, are together, have kids, or maybe it's a woman that has kids together and they've been together. They won't get married because they can't get married because he goes to work, but she's gets the welfare package. And,
yep.
You know, and that stuff it's just happening all over the place. I mean, it's just a racket. And I'll tell you what, the food bank down here, and the food bank gets a lot of food donated to it. So, you know, we've got the Whole Foods and the grocery stores that you go to around here. They have a thing where you can, and this is another racket. You know, you can donate $20 to buy a bag of groceries when you're at the checkout. And the grocery store then goes and buys or takes up everything that's expired or going to expire.
Yep.
And that's what they send to the food bank and give them. So they get paid for their groceries. They get to decide what goes to the food bank. And they use everything that they're not selling, and they get it over there. And I'm not saying all of them are that way, but a lot of them are.
And let me tell you this. 33 years ago, I had to do the math in my head. 33 years ago, when I was working at this little grocery store, there was no barcodes. It was old school. We didn't barcode everything. You know, everything had a price tag on it or whatever. But there was a percentage button. And I was a bag boy, and I watched it happen. I was inquisitive. I asked. And when the welfare mothers would come through, because we knew who they were, when they would come through, they would ring up all of the groceries, and the cashiers had been trained to hit that percentage button. And what that percentage button was 3%. And the owner of that store upcharged everything that was sold on food stamps by 3%, and no one cared. Because the welfare mother, that wasn't coming out of her pocket. The grocery store owner was making 3% more, on food stamps. Wow. It was a racket.
It was a racket. That is a racket.
And no one cared. It's what you're talking about with these $20 brown bag, you know, donate to your local. And I know how that works too, Jason. You're 100%. All they're doing is giving their out of date expired merchandise to the food banks, and they're writing it off for tax benefits. And it's just, it's such a racket. Yeah. I wish people would just sweat a little bit and grow a garden.
There's actually websites out there that promote and teach with training seminars welfare manipulation. This is how to get the most. Yeah. You know, don't say this, say that. Don't do this, do this. And you know, they and it's amazing to me. The part that always gets me about that is the fact that those recipients will spend all that time going through those seminars in order to get the most out of it, but they won't train themselves to work. They won't put any time in. You know, there's no reason in today's age. You can get a college grade education off the internet if you want it. I mean, you know what I'm saying? So, but they won't put any time into that. I mean, they're too busy playing some kind of game or something, but they'll do that. That matters because it's free. I mean, at least that's their thought process. So, yeah. And it's pretty weird.
Well,
and the other thing that I was going to say, too, real quick, is go down to the food bank. And I'll tell you what, if you want to see some nice, fancy cars, food bank's generally a good place to go see it.
You know what else it's a good place for, Jason?
What?
Warrant roundups.
Oh. Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah, it's a great place. I've been told that in certain jurisdictions across the country or whatever, that is the place to go round up all the failure to appears for people that don't have insurance on those nice cars and they get writ tickets. You know, when their baby mama goes to get the groceries at the food bank, you know, they're there impounding cars and taking people to jail. Probably can't do that anymore. That's probably frowned upon. So.
Well, I had a gentleman, and I was taking him down. He got signed up for the food bank, and I think he was disabled and going through a rough time, and it was a completely different story. But he asked me if I'd take him down to the food bank, and I'm like, yeah, I'll go take you down to the food bank. And I'll tell you what, it was just there's a different vibe there, and people are looking at you like you don't belong here. It's not that I wasn't dressed. I wasn't dressed differently than they were or anything like that. They weren't, a lot of these people were dressed pretty fancy, but it was just, there was a vibe there. There was something that they could feel and I could feel. And it's like, you were looking at it, I just wanted to see it and see what it was like. And so I took him over there quite a bit. He had one day he could get so much of his commodity package and the other, get a roast or something once a month and different things. And there was a schedule to it, but I would take him down there, and there was a lot of food there. And, it was just, an interesting place, to be.
Did
very eye opening.
Yeah, it was. And I enjoyed it. I mean, I thought it was fun to go down there and see it and everything like that. But that's one thing that I noticed is the cars. You want to see some nice, fancy spinner rims and stuff like that that cost $2,000. That's a good place to find them.
Wow. It's a good place for intelligence gathering, too. You know, make note of those faces, those cars, for when it hits the fan, you'll know that those are the people you don't want coming around your house.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Around y'all, do y'all have they've done away with it, at least in my area of Texas, and I know they did away with it years ago when I was still in Georgia. Does the state, like Parks and Wildlife or Natural Resources, does anyone do, I hate to say roadkill, but, you know, if somebody hits a deer, is that donated anywhere around y'all? Is that still a thing? I haven't heard about that in years.
Deer. Yes.
Okay.
And you also, they also have a program in Nebraska that allows you to donate the proceeds of your hunt to needy families. You know, you can put into that, and then I don't know how successful it is. I don't have any idea on the numbers. I do know there's a box there that can be checked. You know, so. And I think you can. I don't know if you can donate your roadkill, but you can certainly, if you hit a deer, you make a phone call and you're allowed to salvage the carcass for yourself here.
Hmm. Interesting. We can't salvage roadkill in Texas.
Really?
We had a kid in high school when I was in high school, and he had an old, like a 62 Chevy car. That was kind of his hunting guy, his hunting unit.
I mean, I love it.
He usually got about four deer a year with that thing. So, you know, on purpose.
Love it.
Yeah, I remember.
They don't make them like that anymore.
No. He had a big old pickup grill on the front of that car, and yeah, he kind of hung out at the deer exit sign. There's one to go. But yeah, anyway. So,
well, going down to you, Will, back down to Texas. What I seen this article the other day, and it was about these two that were arrested with trying to take all these firearms back into Mexico. And what I thought was, and they caught them, and I think that they had 150 guns apiece, each in two different rigs, from what I gathered. And but they said that it had been, like, I think it was the 12th time that they've been across the border. They were paid $5,000 to $10,000 to take a load of guns down into Mexico. Cartel contacts? Is that what it is?
Yep. That's they're southbound mules is what's happening. I mean, you know, and that's the thing, is when people think about, when I say mules, these are couriers, right? So your northbound couriers are almost exclusively dope. They're bringing narcotics or dope coming into the country. What leaves the country is almost exclusively currency, cash, or weapons, ammunition. And there is a lot of truth that there are tons of guns that go south into Mexico, and there's tons of ammunition that go into Mexico. Now, there are, in this instance, this was coming out of El Paso, and one of the big things that they were making a push on in that article, Jason, that you're talking about, is FN, the 249, is the civilian version of the military SAW. 5.56 takes a drum magazine. I think you can even belt feed them. And I think they bought it for $10,000 at a gun shop in El Paso. What is not talked about, and I know we've talked about it in this show, is I have seen reports that it's stuff that's left military depots, ammunition, like the stuff that got stopped over in Pueblo.
Right.
That is what you see a lot that is going into Mexico, and it it's a daily, I would go as far as saying it's a daily occurrence. Like, you know, these guys openly admitted that they've done this 10 or 12 times and they got caught once. Well, you know, you think about the number of guns that they got caught with. Well, if they've done it 10 or 12 times in the same load, you know, you're talking about 2,000 guns that have gone into Mexico. And that's a real thing, man, that happens. And Texas, you know, it doesn't really happen in New Mexico. The border in New Mexico is so mountainous that you don't get a lot of traffic coming in and out of New Mexico. The Arizona border, although it's large, it's not like Texas. There is so much border in Texas that is just uninhabited that you do see a lot of stuff crossover. And I'll mention this on El Paso. El Paso is one of the most crooked cities in America. It doesn't get any press. It's a big city. El Paso is about 1 million people. It is exclusively controlled by the Democrat Communist Party. Everybody that's in office in El Paso is a Democrat. They very much have a very open border there, and they're proud of it. So you see a lot of stuff coming in and out of Mexico daily in El Paso. It is not one of my most favorite places.
I was wondering what it was like. So I haven't been down to El Paso. There's El Paso, and then Juarez is right on the other side of the border, right?
Right.
And went over to Juarez several times, and this was going back, I'm trying to think, 25, 30 years ago. But it was interesting just to watch, and I didn't know how much it had changed, but you could sit there and watch. There's a river canal, and they were just going back and forth with boats, and you know, the people are walking over the bridge like it's nothing, but then there's people that were coming across the bridge, and you were watching them climb the fences and this and that. I mean, it was just happening all over the place. It was crazy. And
right out in the open. Yeah, right out in the open.
I mean, and that's what I remember. My dad took me down to you know, show me the border crossers, and they would come over during the day and go do stuff, and then a lot of them would head back at night, and just back and forth. There was a line, but there was no border, and it was just interesting to see.
A couple of years ago, so the University of Texas El Paso, it's a real large university there that's in El Paso, and it came about that, and I'm not talking about the professors or the teachers or whatever, but just the support staff, maintenance and custodial, whatever, that about half of the workers for the University of Texas El Paso were illegal aliens that just came across daily, and they were openly employed by the university. Nobody cares. They openly employ them. And you're right. I mean, the foot traffic, Juarez, which it's kind of a unique, and Jason, you've been there, Tim, I don't know if you've ever been there, but like you can stand in Texas and watch Juarez, like, you know, the cars coming and going and the, you know, commerce there. It's a very internet, the border is a river canal. I mean, it's not that big of a deal. And, it is just it's a dirty little city. I mean, I don't know of a better way of saying it. It just is. It's a dirty city. I don't care for El Paso.
No, I didn't either. It was one of those places. It was just trying to find. I mean, there was robberies that were taking place in broad daylight. Gangs that were breaking into cars and stuff. I mean, and you could watch it. And it was one time when we went over, we were on the Mexican side in Juarez, coming back from the market, and all of a sudden there was a bunch of yelling, and everybody laid down on the ground. Well, I didn't speak Spanish. My uncle didn't speak Spanish, but we were smart enough to figure out that when everybody got down on the ground, you got down on the ground, and there was two guys that got shot. And they were chasing him with a bunch of drugs, and it was a really intense situation. But it was, there was, you, I mean, you saw a lot of stuff. It was crazy, and I can't imagine how bad it is now.
No. I haven't been down there since the 80s, but it was easy to get hurt, robbed, or die then. So I'm sure it hasn't gotten any better. So, yeah.
The one thing that I will say, it's kind of like it might as well be Mexico City or something like that. My understanding, and I don't know, I don't have this firsthand or anything like this, but my understanding is the cartels control El Paso.
Right.
It's a cartel. It's a cartel-ran government, and it shows. I mean, it's that's the feel that I get. You know, Jason, you were talking about going into the food bank and, you know, just having that feeling. That's the way I felt the entire time I was in El Paso. I've been down there a few times, and the feeling didn't go away. You know, I felt uneasy.
Yeah. Exposed.
There you go.
No doubt. Yeah, I can remember that feeling too. Like, okay,
yep.
Head on a swivel. So,
yep. I don't like the feeling of being outgunned.
No, I don't
and
either.
That's the way I felt. So that's,
yeah. All right, where you guys want to go next?
I want to mention something. If Tim, unless you just have something, I just want to throw out a story that's made me laugh. It's a story that's made me laugh all week. Did you guys hear about these monkeys in Mississippi?
Which ones?
Well, not the ones that we brought in from another country. Well, I guess they were brought in from another country. The most recent monkeys we brought in from another country. How about
was
that?
Was that a real deal? Was that with the truck that crashed and the monkeys that got out? Was that okay?
100% real deal, man. I caught this early in the week, and I'm going to tell you guys, I have laughed all week about this. It's just comical for many reasons for me, but the whole news story is from Tulane University, which I think is New Orleans. They were transporting, and I think the guy was like a hotshot driver. I don't think it was like somebody that works for the university, transporting 40 rhesus monkeys that had been infected with COVID, hepatitis, and herpes C.
Oh, geez.
And he ran off the road, crashed, and the monkeys escaped. And I just, I don't know why that has, at least the last I heard, there was only one monkey that was still on the loose. The local sheriff, I think it was in Jasper, Mississippi or something like that, the local sheriff had to take to Facebook and say, this isn't a joke. Like this is not a, you know, we're not pulling anybody's leg. This is a real thing. And he comes out and says on social media, if you see a monkey on your property, kill it.
Dang.
Like, this is no joke. Kill the monkey. And,
can
you imagine?
Can you imagine seeing in Mississippi, seeing that in a headline and come across your screen?
I used to dream about such things, but it's just made me laugh all week of talk about a bad day. Can you, and I got a story. Can I tell a story?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's a fun story. I'll never get a chance to tell this story again because we'll just never have a segue like this. So in 1984, all right, 1984, I have an older cousin of mine, and he's significantly older than me. He's first cousin. He was working as a police officer in a county north of Atlanta in Georgia, and there was an area of this county that was called Collins Hill, and it was a very rural county, a lot of horse country and that sort of thing. And he gets a call one day to go assist a citizen, just an arbitrary phone or arbitrary call over the radio. Remember, there are no cell phones or anything like that. So he shows up to this country house on this little farm, and he gets out of the car, and he walks up to the back service porch, and there's a lady standing there at the screen door. And he says, "How can I help you, man?" And she points up in the sky, and he turns around and looks up, And on a utility pole, a phone pole, there's a monkey perched on top of it. And he sees this monkey, and he says to the woman, "Is that why you called?" And she says, "Yeah." And he says, "Well, is that your monkey?" She says, "No, that's not my monkey. I don't know whose monkey that is." She said, "I walked out to do my laundry, and I was hanging laundry up on the laundry line, the clothesline." And she said, "As I was working my way down the clothesline, I saw this monkey jerking my sheets off of the clothesline." And she said, "I grabbed a broom and I ran him up the telephone pole." And she says, "Now he won't come down, and I'm scared to death to come out and finish my laundry." So my cousin is, you know, this trained cop, right? And he's looking at this clothesline, he's looking at this monkey thinking, "What the heck am I going to do?" You know? So yeah, he goes to the car, and back in the day, because there was no cell phones, there were talk around channels on these Motorola radios where, you know, you could flip to a talk around channel. So he calls his supervisor, sergeant, and tells him what he has on the talk around channel, and says, "What am I supposed to do?" And the sergeant tells him, "Well, you got a Remington 870. If it's not her monkey and it's not supposed to be there, knock it off the pole." So he goes, and by this time, the other couple of guys that are working up in this rural area, they're coming to see the monkey, right? I mean, I'm coming to see this. So a couple other cops show up. Cousin gets the shotgun, goes, knocks this monkey off the pole. It lands down. This is some, you know, 8-pellet double-aught buck, and does a good job on this monkey. It's deader than a doornail there on the ground. So cops being cops, what do? Well, they take the Polaroid, right, and they're posing with this thing, holding its arms out like they're the great white hunter that has been on an African expedition. And, I mean, the woman comes out and thanks them. They're posing with this monkey. She gives them a trash bag to put the monkey in. They tie it up and throw it in the trunk and go about their business. At the end of the day, they take it over to the animal control, and they agree to throw it in the incinerator, and they're going to turn it to ash. All is well. The monkey has been killed. They are heroes of the day. The woman can start putting her sheets back up on the clothesline. A couple days later, they go into roll call. The major of the precinct, who nobody ever sees, is in this roll call, and he comes up and starts reading this letter. Well, folks, the Center for Disease Control and Emory University is based out of Atlanta, okay? And it was about 40 minutes from where all this happened. And unbeknownst to anybody, including the cops, Emory University had an area in the Collins Hill District called the Yerkes Primate Research Center. You guys want to guess what the Center for Disease Control was researching in 1984?
AIDS.
HIV. So what this was an escaped monkey from the Yerkes Primate Center that had been infected with AIDS. So they're reading this letter saying, if you come, strangely enough, this is why I laughed all week. In this letter, they're saying, if you come in contact or you get a call on this monkey, don't touch it, don't engage it, shoot it, call for the Center for Disease Control, you know, don't look at the monkey, you know, you may get infected, all of this sort of stuff. And as the story was told to me, my cousin, who is sitting in the back of the room as they're reading all of this, is just melting out of his chair, just almost passing out as they're talking about this, because no gloves, nothing like that. He's been handling this monkey. So the real fun part of the story is he had just gotten married. And he said, "Do you know how hard it was to go home and tell your wife, once a month I have to go for the Center of Disease Control to get tested for AIDS, but I caught it from a monkey at work."
Oh, my God.
So the whole week, as I've been listening to this, I've just been thinking about these poor cops out hunting these monkeys and just whatever. I wanted to share that story just as a little lighthearted. I'll never get to tell it on air again.
Oh, wow. So that was good. That was excellent. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we haven't had anything that exciting around here.
No.
Thank goodness.
No. Thank goodness.
So. Oh, man.
We were talking about SNAP benefits earlier, and I see that some of these big
companies like Walmart and DoorDash and Amazon and everything are they're working on coming up with a way to go ahead and cover these people's SNAP benefits with, you know, I think they're thinking when the system comes back online, they're going to be able to recollect the money, you know. So, and they're offering these, I don't know what you want to call it, memberships and everything in their organizations that way less than us normal people can pay for, you know, to keep that business coming in. So, of course, talking about 40 million potential customers, right? So, it's like that's interesting. I mean,
and that's once again, Tim. That's a not a benefit I'm eligible for.
No.
You know
exactly. Yeah. If you're a non-welfare family, you don't get. Yeah, you're kicked to the curb. Which it always strikes me as odd that, you know, we're talking 40 million people and there's 150 million people roughly in the United States, I think is the last thing I've seen. So you're talking about like, I don't know, 10% of the population. I mean, they do backflips for that 10%. So
that's right. Yeah. And I know in many instances, you know, these aren't necessarily illegals or anything like that, but I will say, I bet you the majority of that minority are not founding stock of this country. And it makes me just think more about Deuteronomy that, you know, the stranger that's amongst us is going to rise higher and higher while we rise lower and lower. I know, you know, the grocery stores that we shop at, they're no cheaper than the grocery stores that are everywhere else in the country. And it would be nice that, you know, when I go to buy groceries, maybe somebody would have a little consideration and say, you know what, this week's on us. Just pay us later. And that hasn't happened. And I'm not holding my breath either, Tim. I don't think it will happen.
No, you'd be blue. Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah.
It's just furtherance of the weaponization of food. I mean, we can see that going on who gets the blame and who gets the... I read something the other day that was interesting to me on SNAP recipients, and I don't have it in front of me, so I may be slightly off on the numbers, but it was like the average weight of SNAP recipients are 245 pounds. You know?
Jeez.
That's the average. So I was like, yeah. So, yeah. Fat and sassy.
Yeah, something. That's... I'll stop myself. It makes for a better target, Tim.
Yeah, exactly.
Bigger target.
Well, they're sure not running to the front lines to defend their country.
No, that's why they have all those motorized scooters at Walmart. They'll use those.
Those things are kind of they're kind of noisy sometimes. Well, and you know, it's interesting that through all this, these people are. It's like Jason said, they got nice cars. They drive nicer cars than I do. Most of them do. You know what I mean? So they drive. A lot of them are. I don't know. Do you ever notice that places like Walmart or Kroger's or, you know, your grocery stores, the handicap spots, you know, I see people pull in there and park and they look just fine to me. They walk fine. I mean, they get out and everything else. We live in a society of entitlement is the problem with a lot of people these days. It's not about whether you're able to work, whether you're, you know, moral person, a good Christian or anything. It's become about what kind of entitlement you possess. So, and I'm sure there are exceptions to that rule. We're not talking about those. You know, we're talking about the mainstream by and far large. And I think that this becomes the problem with when the churches no longer have their job, which is to take care of the widows and the orphans and that kind of thing. We end up with this everybody jumping on the free bandwagon, which we know there's no such thing as a free lunch, but evidently under systems that aren't God systems, there are free lunch. There is a free lunch, at least to them. So
for a time.
For a time. Yeah.
For a time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I see that did you see the one about ICE rioters having kind of some problems there?
Yeah.
So we've got a lot more. It's hypocritical, the amount of violence and threats and everything else that's coming up against these Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers. So they're really militarizing these people. It's becoming a epidemic of, I mean, when things don't go your way, you're not supposed to act that way, but it's all right for them. So,
Tim, did you see, speaking of, you know, these rioters and these, the left militants, did you catch any, I just caught a blurb on it, so I really can't speak intelligently to it, but have you seen where, oh gosh, I know Kristi Noem and maybe Marco Rubio and some of these high-level cabinet officials are moving their permanent residences onto military bases?
I did hear something about that. It was kind of just a short, quick. I didn't understand, but I'm sure it's because of the threats, right? I mean, they're looking for a higher security.
Yeah.
And
that's my understanding.
There's the big move with Hegseth to get rid of all of the, for lack of a better word, weirdos out of the military. So hopefully strengthening the position of that. I mean, there's been some interior threats prior to that that were concerning in the military, from those people. So by getting rid of them, that strengthened the security for those guys, but they must be getting serious if they're doing that, right? I mean,
yeah, so. that was my thinking is, is it a war footing or are they, not to discount the threats that had been made, because I know that, there have been some people arrested, hits being put out on the Attorney General and all kinds of stuff, but the way my mind works is, is this reactionary or is it preparation on what's about to come? And they're safeguarding them before the next shoe drops. I don't know.
Yeah, well, there's certainly would make a guy wonder. And yeah, what is it like? The old saying, luck favors the prepared, I guess. But you see these kind of things go on, and I think that we're very sheltered here from a lot of this stuff. I mean, just like the No Kings riot, we had nothing. I mean, but you look around and see all these things go on, and it's interesting that these areas that are more predominantly progressive, like Portland or Seattle or Detroit. I mean, I know they just busted the FBI just busted a Halloween terrorist attack in Michigan, I think it was, but the names of the guys who owned the houses that they hit were Imwada Al-Sharmandi and Seda Al-Matari. I mean, that sounds like really good Anglo-American names, doesn't it?
But, right. Yeah.
Yeah, so we're seeing, I'm glad that and one of those houses was across from the high school. So that's an interesting situation there. Yeah. Where,
but,
go ahead.
Yeah, my understanding is this attack that didn't happen, thank goodness, was geared toward children, right? I mean, that was going to be an attack on the children that were participating in whatever Halloween deal, that's what it was. And I think it was a Muslim-driven attack, some jihadis or whatever that were going to attack the kids. So, I mean, you know, I always have a suspicious eye at that, right? Because I'm still not a rah-rah-rah, you know, supporter of the FBI. But if this is true, and that's the way it went, you know, good on them for sure. Yeah, good on them. It's about time they started taking a look at those kind of threats and not, you know, not other ones.
Well, we're kind of, I mean, it would bear keeping in mind that it seems to be their MO, the Muslims and stuff, that they attack the women and the children. I mean, we've got, over in the UK, we've got young girls being raped, we've got women being attacked. You don't hear too many stories about them attacking a couple of guys out on a walk. I mean, as a matter of fact, if I think about it, I don't know if I've ever heard of one of those. Have you?
Tim, as you were talking just now, I can't tell you one, and I follow it pretty closely. I can't tell you one instance that I've heard of, you know, male children being raped and sodomized, but I can't, as far as a male adult, I don't know of one instance of an attack. That I can think of.
Yeah, whether they weren't noteworthy or they just don't happen, I don't know. But it is interesting that kind of shows you that thought process there. So it bears in mind. We should keep that at the front of our mind as far as what their targets are, you know. And
yeah.
I remember reading in one of those UK, well, it was actually that one where it was that woman over there in the UK talking about the knifings and the rapes and everything. And she said, the women don't go outside without a man, you know, I mean, and so I even heard one story, and I don't know if it was true or if it was tongue in cheek, but they were talking about, over there in, like Belgium or maybe Holland, somewhere like that. A lot of these women are running around with pet pigs on leashes.
Oh gosh, funny.
Yeah, you know, and I was like, really? So, but yeah, that way they're not accosted by these Muslim men. So
that's funny.
So, true story. I don't know, but I did read that somewhere in the past.
That's anyway. One of those instances, Tim. If it's not a true story, it should be.
Yeah. Well, I think that shows the state of people's preparation type thing. Well, okay, they don't like hogs. Let's we'll use that for a watchdog. So, and speaking of the hypocrisy of these ICE protesters doing, you know, violence and everything else, I thought it was interesting. And this was another one out of Michigan. The Secretary of State, Jocelyn Benson, and her, quote, grassroots army, end quote, are doing this scenario planning right now in the anticipation of election scamming or something in 2026, because they think that Trump's going to do that. And they're all ready for to respond. And it basically sounds like a violent response, you know.
Yeah. But,
and during the 2020 election, and to my mind, they've proven that there was election fraud by millions of votes. I mean, when you have almost 100% more votes turned in than people alive, somebody was doing something. So, but back to that hypocrisy element again. You know, well, if anything like that happens, we're ready to respond. Or if we say it, you know. So,
yep.
Michigan seems to be a messed up place right now.
Parts of it for doggone sure.
Yeah. It's just wild.
Well, we got to wrap it down. We got about 2 minutes left. Any closing thoughts, men?
I think
go ahead, Tim.
Well. No, keeping your eyes open here at home, like we said, is a good idea. And we don't
yeah, keep a look around here. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, the one universal thing, you know, a lot of times we talk about the stuff that we talk about on the show, it affects the big population centers. That is not the case when it comes to the SNAP stuff. So in the next few days, coming weeks, keeping your head on a swivel is a good thing when you go out to the grocery store or wherever you're going. 72 hours, that's what we've always talked about, right? Going without groceries and that sort of thing. So keep that in mind. As you're going to the store, as you're going to get your provisions, there may be desperate people there.